and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Frisian Fire, Maryland's 5/8 Mile Training Track, completes the full-service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning. Learn more at CountryLifeFarm.com.
The PA Horse Breeders Association introduces the Pennsylvania Stallion Series. Four brand new races to be run at Parks for PA-sired, PA-bred two-year-olds. There are two $100,000 contests on August 22nd, PA Derby Day of the Races. September 24th, PA Derby Day, has two more races, each with a $200,000 purse. The PA Stallion Series, yet another reason why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race. For more, please visit PABred.com.
3 and horse racing off to a fast start? Well, the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two, a couple minutes in, and Jay Pribman is going to join us momentarily. And let me see if I've got any. Yeah, I guess I'd. Well, most of that isn't the kind of news that I can say for next week. I did see the story that will need to be discussed and followed. California opting in on the HISA program, and that only opens the door to, you know, quite a number of other issues that are associated with this, in terms of collecting fees and so forth. So we'll deal with that next week, but I did think it was worth a story mention. Jay Pribman joins us now. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Coming out toward the break, I said that Jay and I were going to discuss hockey first, and I'm imagining that. I know. I can't help myself, but the passing of Guy Lafleur just. It really kind of, you know, you want to talk about sports stars of your childhood. You must have seen him a little bit.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No, he was a great player. I mean, just, you know, and part of just stellar teams as well for those Canadian teams. But he was just a graceful skater and beautiful, beautiful player. Wow. So, yeah. Hey. No, it's been a tough week. Him and Mike Bossy earlier in the week.
Yep.
Tough week for old-time hockey stars.
And they're not, you know, by all rights. You know what's amazing, Jay? I don't know if you've noticed this. It feels so strange to think of guys like Bossy and LaFleur, and there's been plenty of others in baseball and basketball and football. But when you realize they're only 10, not even in some cases, in this case only 7 years older than you and I, and when we were teenagers, they seemed like these godlike stars, and they were almost our age. It's so weird. Maybe it's alarming. Maybe that's why I take
notice.
Yeah,
both.
having spent 10 years in Montreal and living literally three blocks from the Forum, and being there as the Forum transitioned to the new building, it was such an important period. The all of those stars, and not just LaFleur's generation, but the generation that preceded, with the Richards and with Les Gros Bill, with Jean Béliveau. I mean, they were walking around the Forum, Jay. You would walk around the Forum. You could spend $15 on a standing room only ticket, and you go up to them and talk to them, shake hands, get an autograph. They were just part of the scene. It was like the Brooklyn Dodgers thing you read about from Brooklyn years ago, when the Dodgers lived in the brownstones, two blocks
right.
from Ebbets.
Yeah, that must have been
amazing.
That must have been amazing to be able to just interact with those guys, in that manner. The history of that franchise is, you stack that up with any sports franchise in North America.
Yeah. Now, to be honest, we actually, as a sport, as a game ourselves, we probably have the most proximity, right? Player and fan, so to speak, in terms of jockeys and in terms of trainers, right? I mean, they're in closer proximity.
Oh, no, you go to any racetrack in the country. Yeah, there's no question. And people gravitate towards, I mean, you can obviously interact with the current participants, but on days when Santa Anita, for instance, has the George Wolfe Award, fans love seeing the old riders. They gravitate towards them. There's a lot of great memories there. And I think a lot of tracks don't take as much advantage of that opportunity as they should. I mean, people have great memories of past riders and trainers and things like that, and I don't know that there's enough done across the country on a regular basis to facilitate those kinds of interactions, and to me there's no downside to it at all.
Completely agree, and in fact, when I was in Tampa, we had the conversation, DRF, the work that's been done for the En Español team, and we discussed that. I mean, we've got that's a subcategory, in fact, that we could be marketing to the Latin world. We've got Central American stars and South American stars, and we don't take any advantage of marketing to that demographic in the United States. It's a little strange.
Agreed. They used to at Santa Anita have a Latin Fiesta Day, but I don't even think they do that anymore. And I always thought that, I remember telling people when Lafitte Pincai retired, I thought he would have been a perfect person to use as a community outreach person in the Hispanic community. Those things just don't get done. I'm not just saying that locally. I mean, I think your point's valid, and it's not just in that regard. I think there's a lot of communities that the track doesn't reach out to that just takes sort of for granted the core audience and doesn't really go for the a wider audience as much as you would think they might and could, especially when there's a built-in interest in the sport from a lot of those communities. So I don't know. That's a topic for another time when I'm more awake, but I do think that there's not as much done in that regard as the sport could.
I will table that, and it comes up on a semi-regular basis. Let's get into a little Derby notebook, and Marty joined us to start the show, Jay, and of course the point races ended with the Lexington, and the Lexington was going to have some influence on the top 20 and the top 26. So why don't we start with a little post-Lexington analysis and your last road to the Derby postscript.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Tawnyport ran well. I thought Jerome Rodham is the best horse. He kept him wide and in the clear and was willing to give up ground loss in order to get a clean trip. Obviously, the overall quality of that field was a couple of what we saw in some of the final round of prep races, like the Bluegrass or the Santa Anita Derby or even the Wood Memorial. But it was a good, solid performance. It showed that he could come back on short rest. It obviously showed he could win on dirt. His one prior race on dirt in the Risen Star was not bad at all. He didn't run badly. He just wasn't good enough on the day, but he ran well in a race that's proven to be probably the deepest and strongest of all the preps that we had on the road to the Derby this year, with Epicenter winning and both Zandon and Smile Happy coming out of that race and performing well in the Bluegrass, and even farther down the line, Slow Down Andy exited that race to win the Sunland Derby. So that was a pretty strong race. So I thought Tawnyport ran well. I thought In Due Time ran okay. He just ran a solid race to pick up some points. He just sort of ran in spots, like maybe a horse who needs blinkers. But he picked up 4 points. He's got 24, but he's very fortunate to be in that spot, because he should have been disqualified from the 20 he got in the Fountain of Youth. It was a terrible decision by Gulfstream stewards to not disqualify him for the accident that Paco Lopez caused in that race. And because of that, he's still got a chance of getting in the Derby, and if he's in, that means somebody who should be in is going to be out.
Well, we have to await a couple of other decisions, and you've been tabbing and keeping tabs, you and Marty and Dave Grenig, watching for some final decisions. And I recirculated your note about Rafi Bejarano picking up Happy Jack for Doug O'Neill, kind of reuniting a successful pairing from days gone by.
Sure, and they had a lot of success when Rafael was out here and was the leading rider in California, going back a decade ago or so, or maybe 8 years ago, and and Doug was winning training titles. Those two in concert were a pretty powerful team. They won back-to-back Breeders' Cup Dirt Miles with Golden Sense, who, to me is probably one of the most underappreciated top horses we've seen in the last 20 years in this country. He was a really, really top racehorse, and I don't think his name doesn't come up much when people think of, like, who's the best horse? So they're getting back together. I mean, the horse is obviously an extreme long shot. He was third in the Santa Anita Derby because somebody had to be. The first two were well in front of the field, and Forbidden Kingdom chucked it, and so there were three left of the six, and Happy Jack was the best of the remaining three to clunk up and get third. But as we know, Calumet likes to run in these spots. He's got enough points, so on they go.
Exactly. The other topics, you're tracking the bubble horses when it comes to decision-making for early voting and Morello.
Right, so early voting, Chad Brown has said leaning towards the Preakness, but he wants to wait to make a final decision. But in the meantime, Jose Ortiz has been riding early voting, and also Simplification has taken them out on simplification. I don't know that who would have taken if they knew for sure early voting was running, but there's still some question as to whether or not he's going to run, and Antonio Sano wanted a decision on simplification, so he cast his lot with simplification, who I thought ran a sneaky good third in the Florida Derby. So if early voting goes, he'll need a rider. And like I said, I'm not certain he's going to go. And the other horse is in the top 20 on points, but is still not certain to run in the Derby, is Morello. Steve Asmussen said he wasn't going to make any decisions on his plans until he breathed on Sunday or Monday. Obviously, he didn't get a fair shot in the wood when he broke so poorly, and that was his first time trying two turns, so really nothing was learned there. It would seem unusual for those connections and that barn to go on to the Derby. It's not usually their style to do something like that. He's 3 for 3 around one turn, and he's got the Pat Day Mile sitting out there. So, but like I said, we'll see what that group decides to do after he breezes. And if he comes out, that obviously opens up spots for if he in early voting, the two on the bubble right now in points on are Pioneer of Medina and then In Due Time.
Yeah, and part of that decision making, and of course, early voting would be actually both really. If they were to both participate, they both are Vanguard types, and Pioneer Medina does have some speed. In Due Time, kind of a mid pack stalk and go ish horse, you would imagine. So. In terms of the cast of characters and the makeup of the field, it doesn't feel like, the complexion would change. Early voting coming out would make that is a bit of an important potential complexion changer, I suppose.
Yeah, he would obviously be on or near the lead if he ran. We'll see. Unfortunately, the race is going to get drawn 5 days in front of his actual running. They draw on Monday, May 2nd, so we'll have ample time to figure out, based on who's in the field and where they're drawn, what the possible pace might look like.
Jay, beyond that, as you start to, focus in on at least the 18 that we expect to run, and obviously with the backdrop of the two former Baffert trainees as a major portion of the storylines, but set the story stage heading toward Louisville in your mind.
Well, I mean, one of the most significant things is that this will be the first Derby since 2019 that'll be run in front of a full house pandemic impacted delayed race in 2020, and they had a limited crowd last year, so that's obviously among the topics for this year. And then you've just got the obvious trainer jockey owner kind of stories that we'll be doing as we get closer, Steve.
Excellent. Well, Jay, I appreciate it, and looking forward to getting there. I'll be in Louisville on Sunday, and the 2 weeks, the lead up, the Derby fortnight.
The best part of it will be when you show up each morning with Krispy Kreme donuts.
It's nice to be known for something specifically, well, counted upon.
It's a very, very important role that you play in our morning workout.
Ritual.
Give everybody a nice sugar high when you arrive. Keep everybody on alert after the break. So it's good.
Now, Jay Pribman, everybody, DRF Pribman. Jay, I will talk to you this week, and our focus starts to get pretty acute when it comes to Derby once we hit the Ville. Thanks so much.
I'll see you back there. Thanks.
You got it. Jay Pribman, folks, and getting ready, starting to zero win. Scott Shapiro is next case, and let me get back on cue. All right. Oh, good. You're good? All right. So we'll get Scott in here, and we will get back to some handicapping. And we also are going to get the answers to the leaderboard competition, the winners. Looking forward to hearing this. TwinSpires players, the long road, not just for the horses getting points, but for the TwinSpires players. And who won ticket packages? Who's coming to Derby? And also, you know, some nice cash involved as well. So either I don't know if Scott is going to do the big reveal, or if James has got it, but I hear Scott Shapiro with us. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. Looking forward to seeing you and everybody at Churchill here as soon as on Sunday. Let me ask that question that I was just floating. The leaderboard winner. Winners.
Yes. Someone from your home state of New York, David, got the job done. He took the lead into the Lexington and was able to hold off Wayne from Louisiana, who sat second. So no major movement up in the top two spots. So congratulations, 863 points to David, who was involved through much of the ending of things, obviously with the 100-point races over to the winner over the last couple weeks there. Those played out the biggest, as they should. And you know, sounds like David's going to be coming to the Derby, and I think there's a good chance he's going to pop on the simulcast to handicap a race. So looking forward to that. And just a tremendous promotion and contest. Probably my favorite one we do all year long. I think it's it's great. It's long and it's good. You know, you're betting $25 to win as is, so it's not really you're going out of your way. And so congrats to all those that hit the final standings, and especially to David from New York and Wayne from Louisiana, who ran 1-2.
I love it. If you want to get if David's up for a for a radio visit, happy to, you know, sometimes people like that. Sometimes they beg off, but we've had a couple of them over the past few years that's come on. So
I mentioned that to our VIP team as part of it. If he is brave enough to come on with you, and I'm sure, like you said, some folks love it. Some folks would rather stay behind the curtain, but that's a great offer from you.
Not at all. We've done it a few times over the years. Well, want to thank everybody that participated, and it's it's a great, it's a very clever contest that that TwinSpires players really enjoy. So I'm sure it'll
absolutely
back next year. In the meantime, I'm pretty much asking, canvassing everybody. I've had Marty and Nick Tamaro, Jay Pribman, you, James will be next. We've got the prospective field pretty firm, Scott, and there'll be a couple of wrinkles yet, and we hate saying it, but there's always a horse or two that spikes a fever or gets a little puffy ankle. But ideally, the 18 that we know are going for sure, then we got a pair that are waiting pending decisions, Morello and early voting. But coalesce your thinking here with the field coming together as it has.
Yeah, Epicenter, deserving favorite. Hard to knock anything he's done, but whether you want to swallow chalk in the Derby is a question, although his trip has certainly been, or likely trip, the one that he either on the front end or just off it, which is what I expect more, certainly makes him formidable. Will be hard to outright toss him. I probably won't end up landing on him just to look to, little more creative. I'm into the Zandon camp right now. I'm hopeful that two things will happen. I'm hopeful that Summer Is Tomorrow will be the pace presence that he has been overseas here in the States, and kind of make this at least honest pace. You know, normally that first quarter mile is honest. It's the second and third that, you know, concern you when horses start to relax a little bit. If we can get some speed and Zandon can fix these gait issues that weren't really a problem as a two-year-old, but so far through two starts have been a little bit of an issue. You know, you don't want to get buried back too deep in the field in this, you know, in this group. I don't think they're going to separate too much on the front end. I think he's the likeliest to be able to finish the deal. And, you know, who do you trust more right now, more on your horse than Flavien Prat? Obviously, other guys may be equal to some, but hard to knock what he does, and you know he's going to be patient. So I'm in the Zandon camp right now as a top pick. Hopefully he doesn't do anything over the next 2 weeks to change my mind. Underneath type horses, maybe a little more value than Epicenter. I think White Abario is interesting. He's another one of these horses that I think can work out his own trip. Would like it, ideally, if he was coming to Kentucky a little earlier than he is, but that should help his price, at least, not getting a lot of attention for Safi Joseph. I think he's an interesting underneath horse. And I'm thinking Messier is going to be sent aggressively after sitting just off Forbidden Kingdom last time out. He makes, I don't know if he's going to be able to finish the deal, but being on the front end or close to it, I think he's good enough to stick around. And I'm still in the camp that Smile Happy, probably not good enough to turn the tables on Zandon and Epicenter, but third start of the form cycle, I still think he's a high quality horse. I've been on him for a while, backed off a little bit of late, but I think he makes sense underneath. So those are the ones I'm looking at as of now. Obviously, all the trading that goes down, we'll be starting our morning work shows on Monday. Obviously, a lot of action today and tomorrow. Before that, might change some opinions, but that's where I'm at the moment.
All right. We'll continue to monitor, and we'll have the ultimate handicapping session right there in the parlay at Churchill. Typically on Thursday of Derby week with you and James. Let's turn our attention to some action. And I suppose that you're back on the Oaklawn scene this weekend, yes?
Yeah, I spent most of my time on the Oaklawn card, a little bit of Keeneland. But, yeah, this will be the final weekend for me at Oaklawn, with the Churchill starting next Saturday and whatnot. So, yeah, very fun card tomorrow, 12 races. And, yeah, you want to dive into some of it?
Let's go. Let me pull them back here. I just slide Keeneland over there. All right, it's ready to roll.
Okay. We're going to start out with a low-level race, race 4, beating 12-5 Claimer. And number 12, Top Brass, who's moving up in class but has done nothing wrong since being claimed by Carl Broberg. I think there's a lot of speed signed on to his inside. I think the outside draw should work favorably for this 9-year-old gelding 13-time winner, hopefully 14 after tomorrow's race. But I like him. If we can get close to 6-1, I'm not too worried about the class hike. And Broberg has really picked things up over the second half of the meet after a slow meet. Maybe we can sneak in the Indiana bred number 9 Jingle, who hasn't raced since last November. It's an interesting spotting here for Michael Lauer, considering that Indiana's open. It's an Indiana bred, so I'm not sure what to make of that. But I think this horse has some numbers to go back to that could allow him to finish third or fourth for super secta and trifecta type players. But number 12, Top Brass, to start the plays. And the Apple Blossom, normally a five-horse field with three, you know, horses, maybe four with Maracuja, not likely to take the money, not where I'm going to dive into much, but I'm not sure about you, Steve. I really like Clarier here. I know it's going to be tough to run down Latrusco, who's probably loose in this spot, but, man, she just looks like a horse that's going to take a big step forward in this spot and have a big four-year-old campaign. Where did you land in here?
Well, I Latruska to me will dictate. Clarier, I think, is the principal threat ahead of CC, but I think Latruska's tough to beat in here. I'd love, when it came to the cross country pick five, to have enough confidence to just simply, you know, key off of Letruska and start that pick five with her standing alone. But I'll see how the budgeting unfolds.
Yeah, I'm a little worried she's going to get loose. I mean, she's obviously going to be on the lead. Just how slow they go is a question. I just am a little, I mean, maybe I'm crazy. I know visually that race was ultra impressive, the Royal Delta, but she, you know, it was a race that she looked like she couldn't lose. But the number came back pretty slow, and I know it was first off the bench and she didn't get pushed, but you know, you get to these six-year-old females and you just never know if they're going to take a step backwards. I know she doesn't normally run her best race off the layoff, but I'm just hoping to catch her at the right time. And if Claire Ayer is as good as I think she's going to be this year, this is probably the chance to bet her. So I'm going to take a chance against Letruska, knowing that I very well could be frustrated when they turn for home.
All right. That's all right.
Let's see. Race 7, maiden special weight event for three-year-olds. And I was pretty impressed with number 7, Ace High Royal's debut effort. Took no money, really, in a 9-horse field. Wasn't the strongest group, but the son of gentleman's bet, the Florida bred for Ron Moquette, really finished well. Got turned away by the inside speed horse and Smarty Sparty Sense, but should set him up to run a pretty good race stretching out half a furlong. So I'm going to lean on him, definitely respect the favorite, number 9, Plausible Denial, but has burnt a lot of money so far, so starting to wonder maybe if this colt is kind of a horse that's going to struggle to find the winner's circle, or if maybe it's his day. But I'll lean on number 7, Ace High Royal, in the 7th at 7-2 on the line.
Wait for a minute here, and let's pause and talk about a couple of things in this race. We've been tracking Plausible Denial for Jimmy DeVito since the horse was introduced. He has run 3 races that 80% of the time are fast enough to break a maiden. What's notable here is the turn back, the fact that he's turning him back to 6 furlongs, which of course was the distance of the debut. And you know, he absolutely figured to stretch out being, you know, a pioneer of the Nile, and I understand why Jimmy did that, but takes the blinkers off, turns him back, and that might be really the key. I did want a price shop, though, and I totally agree that Ace High Royal is the other interesting horse, second start, and you know, ran a race that absolutely is, you know, fast enough on the debut to win. The two horses that need to be at least discussed are the 2, Raymond. This is the Stone Street homebred, the Hint of Mischief, out of Teen Pauline. And he's been gelded. He's getting first Lasix for his 3-year-old debut. And this horse has every license to be a nice horse. And for them to have gelded this Into Mischief, that had to be an issue, you know, as part of the decision-making process. Debuted at Saratoga and was absolutely nowhere in Major General's graduation. This is a horse that, you know, might be a completely different animal now, you know, what is it, 8-9 months later. So Raymond is 12-1 in this spot for Asmussen and Stone Street. And then Royal Consent. Royal Consent to me is a little bit interesting on the raise. And you mentioned Broberg before when it came to Top Brass. This is a horse that, from pedigree standpoint, happens to be a half to King Kranz. We've learned that, you know, the Cupids get better with experience, like any, you know, Tappet family candidate. And so Royal Consort is a little interesting to me. I mean, if you want to go beyond the 2 obvious players, the 2 and the 3, Raymond at 12-1, Royal Consort at 6-1, Mean Jakey, the other Asmussen with Rosario, is just okay. This is a horse that I think wants turf long-term, and I do want to mention that you mentioned Mike Lauer before, and Mike and Penny have got Overslept making a debut in here. This is a Jimmy Creed that happens to be a half to Strong Tide. the Indiana Stake horse. So there's a little bit of pedigree there. He's a little interesting. Might Want Grass later in the season, being by Jimmy Creed as well. So this is a fun group, and there's more going on than the top line in that seventh race tomorrow.
Yeah, that's interesting. And Royal Consort, you know, whether he's good enough to beat a field like this, it remains to be seen. But, you know, it is a confident, you know, sign of confidence by Broberg, who's pulling all the right strings and could be loose on the lead. So even if not able to beat the whole field, makes some sense. And I do agree, Mean Jakey looks like a kind of an also-ran type underneath at best. And if you're only going to get 3-1, probably worth a chance against. But great point on Raymond. I mean, that Saratoga race, pretty insignificant at this point with all the changes. Wasn't the most live race with Major General, Bourbon Heist, and Fan the Fire, but probably doesn't matter. So very good points you made there.
I also want, before we move on, too, I also want to mention Friday, you know, we didn't have a show last week. We were on the road, and I did take yours and James' analysis and put it up, and you and Marty were really the only, at least the ones that I came across, that made people aware of Awesome Jerry. And I'm sure you did some people a favor in that nightcap last Saturday when you said, you know, be aware, a long shot exotic player, and at least an include, Awesome Jerry. And that may have made a difference in a lot of people's, particularly the multi-race approach, because that was a tough horse to close out the sequence with on Saturday. So well done there.
Appreciate it. It was a tough week overall, so that helped a little bit. I wish I was a little more confident and had a little more money to win. I mostly needed him underneath based on, you know, kind of the way I said it and you said it in the subsequent tweet and post and whatnot. But, yeah, just a horse that had a much better trip and was kind of sitting on that best effort. And some of those major contenders either weren't ready to fire their best off the layoff or got caught up in a little bit of a battle, so It worked out well, and yeah, I'm hopeful. I know I got a couple tweets that it worked out for them, so hopefully some of the listeners were able to take advantage a little
nice.
More than I was.
All right, take us through the late action with the Oaklawn Stake and the Oaklawn Handicap and whatever else.
Sounds good. The Oaklawn Stake, the 3-year-old $150,000 race. I'm against it. Stellar Tap is the favorite in here at 5-2. I really don't have much interest. I thought that was an underwhelming second off the Rebel performance last time out at 3-5. Finished second of 3-horse blanket. Just a horse that has underwhelmed since that impressive effort at Saratoga. That record-breaking performance, right, for Steve Asmussen just hasn't even gotten back to that effort, let alone improved on it. I think Homebrew is the one to beat in here. I don't see a lot of speed. Maybe Kuchar, with the blinkers going on, can be a factor up front, but I'm hoping not. And this horse is 2-for-2 over a fast main track. Obviously an underwhelming effort. I mean, Marty Jones is over the slop. Brad Cox freshened him up. Now I think he's going to be loose on the lead. So hopefully we can get close to 3-1. I'll be singling him in the start of the late pick 5, which is a good one. And the other single that I have is in race 10. This horse won't be much that great of a price at all. But I think Eastside Cool is a horse that continues to move in the right direction. Steve Asmussen claimed this Son of Frosted for $30,000 back on February 19th, and he's rattled off 2 big efforts since then. And another race where there's just not a lot of speed on paper, I think Joel Rosario should be able to take command early in the 10th and win that race relatively easily. Wish I was a little more creative in there. And if I look here for my other pass. Okay, and then the 11th, the Oaklawn Handicap. I don't know about you, Steve. I struggled with this race a little. I think that I respect Fearless quite a bit. Certain can win this race. Plainsman, I'm a little worried about the mile and an eighth. I'm giving Last Samurai a little bit of a look here. Cutting back, ran a big race at a mile and a half, almost beating Lone Rock, the marathon specialist, and a horse that could be moving in the right direction. Did you have a strong opinion in there?
I don't have a strong opinion. I respect Fearless a tremendous amount, and I'm a big fan of his. I was a little stunned, you know, the way Speaker's Corner just, you know, tore his face off in Florida. Correct. I do like Fearless, you know, in general, I've been one of the few people, I guess, that has consistently bet Plainsman at the right time. it's funny.
Yeah.
People always say, that's a horse I never get at the right time. Well, you never hear anybody say, you know, I always bet that horse at the right time. For whatever reason, I seem to get Plainsman right. I don't know why. I've also had success with Rated R, over the years. He's a horse people talk about horses. Oh, I don't, the horses don't stay around enough. You would think that there'd be people, you know, coming to the track with signs, carrying signs and, you know, bringing baskets of carrots to Rated R Superstar. This is start number 60 in his career.
Unbelievable. Yeah. What a run.
Come on. Why isn't there a huge Rated R Superstar, fan club? He's even got a fun name. There's a lot of moving parts to this race, and whenever I see that, a horse like Plainsman, when you know there's some new faces and there's, you know, things, my tendency is to go toward a horse that you know is going to just simply run his race, and he does that every single time. I'm not excited about accepting 5-2, you know, or you know, 7-5, 8-5 on Fearless. But, you know, I Plainsman to me, I understand your thinking on Last Samurai completely. But I just keep coming back to Plainsman. And I keep it simple. And him and Fearless feel like the two A's.
Yeah, he's going to get a great trip, as he almost always does. He has that tactical speed. And he likes it at Oaklawn. We know that. He's hard to knock. Like I said, the one concern for me, you know, I remember Brad, you know, being a little bit concerned about going past a mile at one point, to the point where after the ACAC, he didn't go out to Del Mar for the Breeders' Cup mile and opted to go 7 furlongs at Belmont instead in the Bold Ruler. But those concerns at Oaklawn seem to have gone away. He's run two real good races at a mile and a 16th. So we'll see. You know, the 6 and 8, Plainsman and Fearless, certainly hard to knock, and I could certainly understand kind of taking a stand with those two.
There you go. And out of curiosity, you got anything that grabbed you in the State Bred Nightcap?
I thought the pace was going to be very, very contentious in here. It's hard to trust J.E.'s hand-me-down. Hasn't won in quite some time, but you get the move into the Asmussen barn, you get the move to Joel Rosario, and you get a hot pace. I thought he was very likely to run his race, whether that means he's going to win. The number 2, Macho Rocco, I'm a little concerned, is going to get caught up in the duel. Moves from an outside post in his last couple to an inside post. But I thought he ran big. I know he ran 5th last out, but that was on quick return, just a little over 2 weeks. And he ran almost back to that number, and it was a career best number, at least on Brisnet, the March 17th race. So if Elvis Gonzalez can kind of work out a trip and not send too aggressively, I think he can outrun his odds. And then 2 other outside horses, I'm a Bling Cat, really not a win machine by any stretch, had to drop in for 20, but he should get a good trip out there. UVC is a horse that absolutely botched the break last time from an inside draw. And if he gets overlooked, which he should, I think he should get a good trip out there, kind of just off the pace from the outside. So those are the 4 I would lean to using, 2, 9, 10. And 11, and 3 of them are good prices.
Well, the 11 intrigues me. UVC, he did disappoint. I liked him 3 weeks ago a lot on the turn back, and it did not happen off that botched opening. So
Yeah. Maybe
we go back to him, and Giroux sticks, which is encouraging as well. And you do have Jerry Caroom, the local owner who's a pilot. He flies all over the place and is a huge character. And I'm sure on a big day, Oaklawn Handicap Day, I'm sure Jerry Caroom would love to win the nightcap. You know, not that Danny Caldwell doesn't want to win the nightcap as well with When the Doves Cry or any of these others, you know, the other locals. But feels like maybe UBC gets it back after the botched try 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, you could toss that race. This horse is normally one that gets out of the gate incredibly well, whether he's on the lead or right off it. And, you know, the outside draw should work well. So I love it, you know, 12-1, hopefully get every bit of it.
There it is. Fun card. It's a weird. I'm going to talk to Hammer in about 15 minutes after James, and it's kind of a funky card the way it turned out, and you got those allowances and a starter involved in there in the middle of everything. It's a funny set of sequences, but I'm playing, so it should be fun. Anything today?
The only thing I have today, I'm going to go back to a horse I gave out here once before, and it's in the finale, number 3, Truculent, 9-2 on the line.
Oh, did we, lose, I think we lost. I think we lost Scott. Yeah. No, you know what? I'll text him because James is tight, Casey. So let's get James in. He's got to be done by 11. So let's get James on and wrap up. Yeah, do that. And I will text Scott and he'll give us, we'll give him that opportunity to give us the, yeah. At first case, I wasn't sure if we lost Scott or if we lost me because the sound in the headset went real hollow, so sometimes that makes me think that I've been dropped, disconnected. Scully will join us next. We'll get I'm sure some more Keeneland opinions, and now I got Aaron. I got Aaron Yagoda writing to me. Pretty funny. Hammer, top of the hour as well. Callie Francois from Laurel to talk about their nice stake action. And then Papo to wrap up things. James Scully is with us. And let me just write back to Scott just wrote to me. Give me the play. There we go. Here we go. All right. James Scully, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, it's we've come a little bit of spring here in Lexington, Kentucky. It's supposed to be in the 70s, maybe even the low 80s this weekend, and going to have some nice, few nice days of week, really beautiful weather out of Keeneland.
Well, it's about time.
Exactly.
I think everybody's waited long enough.
It feels like we're coming out of February or something with all the cold weather. I know.
Exactly. So, are the dogwoods in bloom?
Yeah, you know, they've been holding out. You know, it seems like a lot of this stuff it bloomed, like a lot of stuff just bloomed weeks ago when it was like we had a little bit of a warm spell. We may have had a couple of freezing periods where it's frozen overnight since, but a lot of it, like, you know, our tulips in our front yard are still hanging in there. So, the stuff looks pretty good. So far, but now they're predicting a chance of like another round of freezing weather at night next week, so we'll see what happens.
Seriously?
Yeah, seriously. I mean, down in the low 30s next week, so it sucks.
Holy shit, this is unbelievable. Unbelievable. By the way, Scott Shapiro is pushing Truculent. Truculent is his Friday play. We'll get James's last second Friday push in a minute. And in fact, did you hit last week? I think you did.
Not last week. I think it was 2 weeks ago I hit. Or okay. It was, yeah, that's right. 2 weeks ago I hit. Last week, I think it ran it placed. You know, I've had a bunch of placings with that, too. I've had a number of long shots that I've given out that have run second. And, I mean, I gave one out there at the end of Fairgrounds, and it went off like 20-some to 1, and a big long shot won, and it paid $19 to place and $13 to show. So I got a lot of positive feedback from people who bet that horse across the board.
Excellent. Well, we'll get to the last second Friday push at the last second. Before we talk any Keeneland plays for Saturday, James, the Kentucky Derby report from you, I've asked everybody this morning with the preliminaries over, with the points set, and the field at least of 18 that we know as of now, 2 weeks out. What's your thinking as we start to really pare down?
Well, I mean, you know, I think we have a solid group of depth at the top. You know, I just think we have a group of four or five horses. You know, I look at the Bluegrass winner, Zandon, Louisiana Derby winner, Epicenter, the Santa Anita Derby winner, Taba, and the Wood Memorial winner, Mo Donegal. And, you know, perhaps you can throw Messier in there as well. And, you know, you really have, I think, a solid, deep group of quality win contenders. Sometimes you have a good feel, but you have like two or three that really sort of perhaps might stick above the rest. You know, I think at least with the four, with Kaiba, with Epicenter, you know, and with Zandon, and or with those three, you really have three outstanding horses, and then you have plenty of depth behind them. One thing that I've been doing some work, you know, just breaking out some of these figures, both like late pace numbers and speed ratings from BrisNet. And, I mean, the one thing that really just stands out when you take a look at just the numbers on paper is the difference in a couple of these preps. These horses coming out of the Florida Derby. And you have a viable horses that are going to get played by, you know, they won't be the favorite, but they're going to get some action. But horses like Guadabario, Charge It, and Simplification. And then it's the same with the Arkansas Derby with Cyberknife and Barber Road and Unoho. Those horses have run significantly lower on the BrisNet numbers, both in terms of speed ratings and late pace ratings than the other prep races. And, I mean, you can just take a look at, like, the Santa Anita Derby compared to the Florida Derby, and there's a 15-point difference. And if you're looking at just the late pace numbers, even if you're just looking at how fast these horses finished in these preps, Steve, you'll see, like, the final 3/8 of a mile in the Florida Derby is 40 seconds. And in some of these other races, it's like 37-2, 37-3. So they're running like up to 10 lengths faster, at least on paper. And to me, that's not to say that horses like Charge It and other Cyberknife and other ones from those races won't go on and be good horses down the road. But at least right now, I'm questioning whether they're fast enough. And I'm taking the stance where I'm going to fade the horses from the Arkansas Derby and the Florida Derby and the Kentucky Derby.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll do a couple of things with you next week. We're going to do kind of a walkthrough. I mean, you've referenced it just now, but I want you to walk everybody through. You know, typically I've done this with you and Ed, where we would walk through the all the different categories of the Briz PPs and help people that might be looking at them. You know, they're available for the Derby all throughout the, frankly, through the whole run up to Derby, and you guys make them very available. And so those people looking and not fully understanding, you know, the way in which the numbers, what they mean and how to interpret them, and the prime power, you know, how that's determined. We'll do something next week on that, James. All right.
Yeah, absolutely. Look forward to that, Steve. It'll be great.
Let's get some action, some Scully plays for the weekend.
Hmm. All right. Well, I'll start at Keeneland. You know, I'll go through some stakes at Keeneland and do Oakland as well. Still got to do some work, you know, on the earlier part of tomorrow's card there at Keeneland. But you know, I did look at these stakes pretty closely. I thought in the Ben Ally. You know, one thing about those Oakon races, the last couple of years we've been dealing with that pandemic, but those Oakon, I think the Apple Blossom has the cachet that they can run that stake anytime they want to on the calendar, and it's going to get good horses. The Oakland handicap doesn't. And, you know, when it was being run on April 2nd, I thought it was more of a viable race where horsemen didn't have to choose between spots. But you're even seeing, like, tomorrow where it's taking place the same day as the Ben Ali, and even though it's worth 700 grand more, I think, like, horses like Proxy and Warrant, you know, Scalding would have all added something to the Oakland handicap field. And I just think that race should be early in the meet. I mean, you're basically making horsemen choose between the Ali Sheba and the Oakland handicap, and I just think it takes away from the quality of all these races. But just taking a look at the Ben Ali, I do like Proxy in there. You know, I'm a little bit leery because he was such a non-winning type last year. But I loved how he opened this year with that allowance win down at Fairgrounds. You know, really looked the part. And I thought that was a very solid second against a horse that was razor sharp in Olympiad in the New Orleans handicap. Last time, he finished like almost three lengths clear of third, and he earned a career best 103 speed rating, career best like late pace number, finished well, and I just think he's going to continue to show more at age four this year for Michael Stidham, and I'm going to give him the edge over Warrant and Scalding and others in the Ben Ali tomorrow, Steve.
Nice. All right, 7-2, starting things out.
Yeah, and then in the Elkhorn Stakes, you know, one thing about the Keeneland Turf, I don't know if people have been talking about it on your show, but, you know, it's, the meet at Keeneland's pretty short, and at certain distances, you might not get much of a sample size, but after, you know, we've run as many days now, we've got more than 10 double-digit number of turf routes this meet, and there's been no wire-to-wire wins on the turf going two turns. I thought yesterday was a good example because we have seen a number of wire-wire wins in these turf sprints, and it's just completely night and day the difference between them. Yesterday, there was one turf sprint. The horse that won that went wire-to-wire at 8-1, Ruthen. If you were watching that last race yesterday, the favorite is Gladys. He's out there on a two-length lead going, you know, six furlongs and 115 and change, and he winds up running fifth. And I thought even in the Maker's Mark Mile where we saw Cheryl Spite reel in Masson and Smooth Like Straight in that final 16th of a mile, I think that the course is you know, I'm not saying the right speed horse couldn't leave wire to wire, but I think the course favors closers so far this spring. That Elkhorn tomorrow, Keeneland, really got some pace in there where horses like, you know, two Emmys coming off a wire-to-wire win in New Orleans in the Nunez, and Channel Maker, you know, really does his best running up close. And then plus you got a couple other speed horses. I thought another mystery, you know, he had been trained by Michael McCarthy earlier in his career. He was turned over to Chris Block last year. He was a little bit inconsistent last year. He did win a couple of minor stakes, but I liked his effort in the John B. Conley. And I thought, even though he was sort of eighth last time, I thought he made up some ground in the stretch in a race that had a real slow pace that, you know, just didn't set up well for him. And I think he's eligible to show a little bit more this season for Chris Block. His figures, his numbers are solid for those efforts. And I think he's going to get the right setup. He's got a jockey switch to Flavian Pratt. He's listed at 6-1 on the morning line. So I'm tabbing another mystery to win the Elkhorn Stakes tomorrow.
I like that, and I had the exact same thought process, and that win in the Connolly really stood out because we were on the air for the NHC, and it was during the during the final table, and or maybe the lead up. No, I think it was during the final table, and near the end of the contest, and. It was important. It just really kind of stood out. So I like that tab a lot.
The last race tomorrow is an entry level allowance. It's a little bit interesting. We got a number of horses that are like 4-1 or lower on the morning line. We have Tough to Tame, who ran in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last year. We have B Sud for Dallas Stewart coming off a third at Oakland in his opener, good maiden winner at Churchill last year. Unikey for Teresa Pompey is going to get bit with IRAT a little bit. But I really like number 1A, Momentum. I thought that race he ran on the Risen Star undercard on February 19th at Fairgrounds, I thought that was a dynamite effort that day. Marsalis came back and won by open length on the Louisiana Derby undercard for Asmussen and Rosario. And I thought Momentum really ran a big race that day to outkick him, to outfinish him to the wire. I think both horses, Momentous is a Snell family of Cleveland and other stakes winners. And I think if he had been in another barn, he might have been like a little bit pushed a little bit quicker to come back for allowance, maybe be looking at, or, you know, maybe the Derby would be too soon, but the race like a Preakness, you could get a good stakes start in for, and maybe he could still get involved. But, you know, Pletcher's taking his time with him, and I think that horse has a big upside. So I'm going to be playing Momentus. At the very least, I'll be singling him in some multi-race plays. And if he's 4-1 on the morning line, if his odds aren't too short, I'll be playing him to win as well in the finale tomorrow, Steve.
All right. Got it.
And then at Oakland Park, what's that?
I said, and what else?
Oh, yeah, and then I'll just give you my plays at Oakland. You know, in the Apple Blossom, I'm on Clairiere. Granted, Latruska, it's all a matter of pace, and I won't be surprised if she leads wire to wire, but I'm hoping that Superior could show some at least early, like, speed, and maybe CC and Maracuja can maybe take a little bit of an early run at her. You know, Clairiere doesn't get out of the gate that fast, but I loved her comeback win at Fairgrounds, and I was a big fan of hers last year, Steve, so I'm going to go with her in Apple Blossom as, you know, the probable second choice in the wagering. But that's how I see that race shaping up.
All right.
And then in the, you know, in Oakland Handicap, I really looked at that race. I really like those runner-up efforts by Fearless at a mile, and I like the way he stretched out the two turns last time, or stretched back out the two turns in the Ghost Zapper. The Ghost Zapper race, a perfect example, shows a little bit of those Florida horses. They went 6 furlongs and won 12-2, and he came home real fast that day, whereas they went like 1/10 flat in the Florida Derby and ran a slower final time than Fearless. I thought that was a really good effort by that colt. He's got some upside for Pletcher. The way I'm going to play the Oakland Handicap, I'm going to try to fade a couple of these favorites in straight exactas. And I'm going to play Fearless over Thomas Shelby, who I think is going to be speed from the inside with David Cohen, and, you know, could run well if he gets the right setup. Another horse I like a little bit to hit the board, Steve, is Superstock. And granted, you know, one thing about him is that his numbers, you know, were pretty inferior last year, but I thought that that New Orleans Classic effort last time, where he ran fourth, was a little bit sneaky. It was an improvement upon the Razorback. He likes the mile and eighth distance. He's 2-for-4 at the distance, and he likes Oakland. And I thought at double digit odds, Superstock had a little bit of a look for a minor award in that spot. So I got Fearless over Thomas Shelby and Superstock in the Oakland Cap.
All right.
And then my last second Friday play will be in a turf sprint today at Keeneland. Let me find that race. It's race number 10, the last race on the card, number 8, Icy River. Gerardo Corrales takes the mount. You know, he's already got 6 wins at Keeneland. Corrales has been so dynamite the last 2 winners at Turfway. Been waiting for him to start winning, you know, races, you know, carry that form forward. Perhaps, you know, he'll go on and do more at the summer if he's riding at Churchill more. And I like this Keen Ice. Obviously, number 7, Musical Designs, eligible to show more speed than he did last time. But he'll be the favorite in there. Icy River's 12-1 on the morning line. Number 8, Icy River in race 10.
I like it. Nice. Big number. Good deal.
And that's all I got. I hope you have a fantastic weekend, Steve. Best of luck to you.
James Scully, everybody. James_Scully 111. And the Derby Report will continue next week. And, of course, weekend preview at the races presented by Twin Spires continues for hour 3. Hammer's going to join us next. And after Hammer, Callie Francois at Laurel. They've got another nice steak slate. 5 stakes tomorrow, including the King Leatherberry. I'm a big fan of having, you know, races, have races named for people that can enjoy them. right? These races don't all have to be memorials. You know? like the Eddie. In fact, Hammer, maybe Hammer will talk to that. The Eddie D. There's a perfect example. Named a race after Eddie Delahousse and you know, get him out there to present the trophy. Let's, you know, give people the pleasure and of the honor while they can enjoy it. Back after this, hour three at the races, last hour before we take up residence in Louisville starting Monday. Back after this, Hammer joins us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick. Sirius. The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick.
The Belmont Stakes returns to Belmont Park Saturday, June 11th. Tickets to the top of the stretch, the premier trackside picnic area with personal grills are almost sold out. Tickets to the Test of the Champion are on sale at BelmontStakes.com. Hurry before it's gone. Experience the all-new Paddock Suite at Saratoga Racecourse. Available for groups of up to 80 guests, the venue features a climate-controlled lounge overlooking the Saratoga Paddock. Visit NYRA.com/Saratoga to book your group outing today.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions.